Good morning. It's wonderful to be here in Victoria. You please pray with me, O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
beloved Jesus Christ,
blessed Master,
dearest Mother,
saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King,
reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. Kalia's had a song come to her, and if you'd like to tell a little story around it, you'd be welcome to, and I've asked her to sing it this morning. So,
Whenever I've talked to David, these are the words that he uses for me to help me connect to the divine and help it moves through me so that I can do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. So these are David's words. Okay. And you can feel free to join in with me. If you get those words. Soften, soften, open the door. Wider, wider, and then a little more. Gentle, loving, leading me home. Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om.
Softening, soften, open the door. Wider, wider, and a little more. Gentle, loving, leading me home. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om. Soften, soften, open the door. Lighter, wider, and a little more. Gentle, loving, guiding me home. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om. Soften, soften, soften the door. Wider, wider, lend a little more. Gentle, gentle, guiding me home. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om. Soften, soften, open the door. Wider, wider, and a little more. Gentle, gentling, letting me home. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram Om. Thank you. It's lovely. To my surprise, in the Vision magazine, they published one of my letters to a devotee, so I thought I would read it to you. This is in response to a letter where somebody had made a mistake and was being quite judgmental towards themselves. But it can apply equally in terms of the difference between judgment and being judgmental towards ourselves or towards somebody else. I make a distinction between having judgment and being judgmental. You must exercise judgment in life to distinguish between what draws you closer to God and that which creates separation. However, when you are judgmental, it separates you from God. The content of what you think may be true, but to allow that to detach you from your true self cannot stand. It is at that crucial point of separation you must immediately go to work on yourself to have reunion with God. Otherwise, your instrument of judgment is polluted, and you will cease to be in the realm of truth. We have all made mistakes on the way up. The real point is to learn our lessons and integrate these lessons into the fabric of our beings. Feeling pain about making a mistake is normal, but we should not make a fetish of it. That is catering to the ego. Your letter reminded me of the story of a group of monks walking down the road. When they came to a river, the head monk spied a woman standing nearby, contemplating how to cross the river. He offered to carry her across, which she agreed as the currents were very strong. After parting ways on the other side, the group of monks continued on. Time and a few miles passed by when the younger monk told his elder that it was improper for a monk to touch a woman. The older monk said, "Oh yes, I can see that although I only carried that lady across the river, you are carrying her still." Be of good cheer. Recover quickly from misperception of truth and be on your way. God is ever yearning to shine from every cell of your being, and even an instant away from Him is too long. Pronams, David. This notion of being able to exercise judgment versus being judgmental is something that I run across often. As people are confused as to thinking, well, perhaps I shouldn't have any thoughts about correct behavior or incorrect behavior, but this is really an unrealistic thing to think of yourself. We all must have judgment in this life. In the yoga philosophy, there are four broad categories of yoga, that is, approaches to the divine, each one carrying their own discipline. But I have oftentimes thought that we follow a fourfold path in the sense that we utilize each one of the strengths of these different types of yoga. The yoga of discernment is jnana yoga. Jnana yoga is wisdom, is intelligence applied to knowing what is right and what is wrong. And in the beginning, we perhaps do not have intuition of what God's guidance is. That requires a purified mind. So we're left with our own judgment and what to do, when to do things, and so on. And so Master wrote a prayer in which he asked God to guide his reason and to guide his will so that he would make the right decisions. This is the beginning of entering into wisdom, where we submit ourselves and our ideas to the wisdom of the divine intelligence, asking God to guide our thoughts, our intentions, our will. But it's almost as if, in many cases, that God is at some distance and, well, I am just myself, and this is my mind, these are my thoughts, and they are, by definition, separate from what God is. So I'm asking God from a distance to guide my thoughts, if you would please. And then we read the different scriptures of the world, and in the Old Testament, we have the Ten Commandments. Patanjali, who existed around the time of Jesus, he had the yamas and the niyamas, the do's and the don'ts. And every great religion has these prescriptions. And the idea is that if you don't know how to lead your life correctly, that these prescriptions are there to help to bring you into alignment with what intuitive wisdom and intuitive truth has told great masters down through time as to what is the right thing to do. Right thing to do in the sense that what outcome will come from your decisions. And when you make a decision and a choice, it will very definitely have outcomes to it. Now, it seems as though, in many cases, people get away with bad behavior. Well, they seem to get away with it. Why can't I? And so we try a little bit on ourselves, thinking that perhaps we'll make some advancement that will get by in life easier. The closer we get to our own karma, that is, the more highly developed we get, the less leniency there is between cause and effect. So when you're very close to your karma, you do some small mistake, and there can be large ramifications to it, whereas somebody else perhaps can get away with murder and seemingly benefit from it and just move on in life and not be overly concerned, particularly if they're sociopathic. But that individual is eyeing many, many lifetimes of coming back and doing it again until they learn that we are not separate from anyone else. And if we harm anyone else, we're truly creating harm for ourselves. And we not only take that on as an intellectual idea, but we begin to really experience it, to really know it. I had a powerful experience once in which God showed me a previous lifetime that I had. And in that lifetime, I was a small boy, 6 years old. I was in Russia, and I was sitting in our home. My mother had died. My father was insane. The German Nazis were attacking in Stalingrad, and there was very little food, very little fuel, and it was a dire circumstance. So as he is showing me this, I was thinking of this little six-year-old boy, and I thought, God, how is this fair that this child should be subjected to these kinds of conditions? Well, somewhat to my surprise, God immediately took me to a previous lifetime in which I was part of the Mongols who came charging across and coming all the way into Austria and into Russia. And I happened to be a very good warrior. And I really thought nothing about killing and war, and it was just a way of life. And I had created quite a bit of mayhem, and I was made a governor in a province in Russia. And as a result of that, I set up a life. And I desired to have someone who cared about me, and I fell in love with a woman. She was a Russian. And I came to know that she had betrayed me, so I arranged for her to be killed. Well, that was kind of the end of the portrayal of that lifetime, but then God brought my mind back, and I was a continuation of that same soul as this little boy. And I had created suffering for so many children. The mother that I had in that lifetime was this woman who had betrayed me in another lifetime. She had died, and I had been left without my mother. My father had also been connected with me in this lifetime. And what I saw was this tapestry of events that wove themselves together in perfection, and that this law of cause and effect was absolutely in play. Now, having suffered as I did, as that little boy, and eventually I died not too much longer in a prison on a stone-cold floor, I was shown then how my identification with that child and the suffering that child went through. I could not easily create suffering for another, particularly a child, without seeing myself as that child, having suffered through those circumstances. That in my consciousness slowly would form the idea, I could not take the life of another without it having consequences for myself at a later time. Now, consciously and unconsciously, all of this pattern was beginning to unfold and to inform me and give me compassion, so that if I saw somebody else who was in suffering, I would see myself as that person, and so on. Compassion is enlargement of the heart and the identification of self. In the beginning, perhaps we're only concerned with ourselves. And what is my happiness? What pleases me? What will give me pleasure in this life? And slowly, as we develop in consciousness, that circle of love, that circle of compassion, will expand out to include another person, to include a family. And slowly that identification begins to grow so that the village or the community in which we live, suddenly I have keen appreciation for any kind of suffering or difficulty. I want the best for everybody there. But it may be that I see my village or my tribe or my country versus everyone else's. And I still make a distinction there. So there's more for me to go through. There's more greater identification until I come to the point of the universal vision. And in that vision, I see everyone as an extension of myself. Yogananda wrote a wonderful poem in which he was describing his state of God realization. And in that state, he was the grass upon which people walked. He was the trees that were growing. He saw and felt himself to be a part of everything that is. And in that moment, that realization comes, and you realize that you are connected with everything that is, and yet you are in a state of transcendence, and you realize that that grass will soon die and go on. The tree will come to a point where it will die. And yet there is an eternal sense of self. This all speaks to jnana. This is the higher nature of wisdom. It goes beyond reason. It goes beyond your intellect. It goes into a deep and meaningful experience that you have as consciousness expands out beyond your own little confines of the human ego and extends out and becomes omniscience. Omniscience is that consciousness of a oneness and a connection with everything that is. And so this is the natural progression that we have in spiritual consciousness. Most of us find ourselves very focused upon the human ego, what my concerns are, what my thoughts are, with a little bit of compassion thrown in for this world when we think about it, or when we're faced with it in some way. But in the state of divine realization, it becomes a living reality in which you are part of everything and every one that you are in connection with that exists throughout all of this creation. You are now seeing this world as God sees this world. And when God looks out, he does not see this one as part of me and this one as not part of me. That's human judgmentalism. And we see so much of that in religion, where somebody is judgmental against another. Now, we can look at somebody's life and say, you know what? They keep going down that road. There's some pretty predictable consequences that are going to happen there. And they're not going to be pleasant, and they're not going to be easy. And I feel compassion for that individual, because I know how long it takes to dig yourself out of that hole. And it's going to be a long journey back out. And we all make it back out. We all make it into the state of realization. When I was 12 years old, I came to the awareness of the implications. I grew up in a church. They were not heavy on hell and damnation and all of that, but it was implicit in the teachings. And I came to think, no, what are they saying here? That if people don't think in a particular way, they're going to be damned for eternity, forever. Now, what kind of plan is that? I thought, that's not even a very good plan, much less a perfect plan. It has a lot of holes in it, a lot of fallacies. And I actually asked a traditional Christian one time, I said, now you're in heaven, and 90% of the earth is in hell because they didn't believe quite the right way during their 60 or 70 years of sojourn here. and they're suffering forever. How can you be happy in heaven knowing that these people are suffering? And much to my surprise, he had an answer for me. He said, God makes you forget. I said, but God can't forget, and God loves us more than a loving father does. How could that be fair? How could that be equitable? How could you be at peace with yourself and have that kind of condition going on? It's just not reasonable. It doesn't stand the test of reason, much less anything that we would think or feel or know about God from our own experience. God is all love, all light, is always our well-wisher, and that he's rooting for us. Now, if God be truth, then God must be universally true. Just like the law of mathematics, if it's true here in North America, then it must be true in India, it must be true in Africa, it must be true anywhere you go in this material creation, if it be true. And by whatever language you call it, whatever you call those numbers, they're going to add up to the same thing. And that must be true as well with God. If God be true, it must be universal truth. And God must be residing in the hearts of everyone. It must be. Where else would we come from but from God if that is the sole creative force of everything that is? It must be so. So we need to let go of this sectarianism. I am right and everybody is wrong. And the human ego is such a wonderful paragon of virtue. I make no mistakes, and that allows me to look down on everyone else. This is not spiritual thinking. This is sectarianism. This is dogmatism. And it will not stand the test of time. To soften your heart, to open it in love and compassion, to begin to see if somebody is making an error. One time I was thinking, oh, these great spiritual masters, Jesus and Buddha and Krishna, how they must look down on us. You know, our own little pathetic attempts to be good and try to put ourselves on the spiritual path and how many times we fail and one step forward and two steps back and just how they must look down upon us. And God instantly corrected me and he said, no, it's not like that. Every great spiritual master has had to face those tests. Even Jesus fell 3 times while he was carrying the cross. Everyone falls along the way. Everyone makes mistakes. And so in our lives of trying to do our best to live a spiritual life, to evolve, to come into that consciousness of God's divine presence, those great spiritual beings don't look down upon us. They look out through our experience. They know our experience intimately, so God is telling me as he's showing me this. But they, these great masters, know something that you don't yet know. They know that they too struggled. They too sometimes fell. They made mistakes and it was painful. But they also know that eventually they rose into high divine consciousness. And they see that for you too. And you don't know that yet. But they know that about you. And in their mind and in their consciousness, when they see us in that perfection, it helps us to evolve. Papa Ram Dass used to see God in everyone. And one, it was just realization that he had come to. But he also said it was the quickest way to help somebody else evolve. Unequivocally. See God in them, and you help to awaken that God-like nature. And this is a wonderful principle. We think about how we go about our life and the judgments that we hand out left, right, and center. And we just think that, well, my way of thinking is the only way of thinking. And are we helping that individual, or is it acting as a curse? If we see somebody who has unlovely qualities, And we're disgusted by them. We're just done with them. We can't stand it anymore. And that's how we think of that person. That we are actually communicating that, perhaps through our words, but definitely through our thoughts, by the ways that we think on someone. It affects that individual, and we're either strengthening and helping them to lift them higher, or we're helping to enforce the very things that they're struggling with and that are causing them pain. And which do we do? Do we act as a blessing for others in this world, or do we heap curse upon curse upon somebody who is already drowning, already struggling, and is barely, if at all, keeping their head above water? And that's on us individually. That's part of our law of cause and effect. Because how we judge others is certainly how we will turn around and judge ourselves. Whenever you see somebody who has a sharp, acerbic tongue, they may go after other people, but I assure you, in the quietness of their own thoughts, they turn that very harsh sword against themselves. And there's no escape from it. So we can actually have compassion for that individual. I wish they were softer. I wish that they were more open. I wish they saw more of the divine nature in themselves and in others. It's very hard life to go through and have such harsh criticism of everyone and everything. That is judgmentalism. But to have judgment is absolutely necessary. We must be able to distinguish good from bad, right from wrong, higher from lower, for ourselves, if for nobody else. We must be able to set ourselves on the right track and to recognize that when we're off track, that it's going to create difficulties for ourselves and others. Sri Yukteswar said on the high planet where he was then serving, Hiranyaloka, which is a astral heaven. It's up above the astral planes, actually. But that beings there are perfecting their own consciousness so that they can move from these high astral planes into the causal, which is even more refined and more perfect. And that they, if they make even a small thought error, that they feel great pain at this. And so this is the way it often is, that when we make a small error, and as we're rising higher in consciousness, it causes us great pain, even to make a small error. And this isn't a bad thing in of itself. It's a sharp reminder to our own consciousness, don't do that. But then don't hang on to that. Don't make a fetish of it. Let it go. Learn the lesson and let it go. And it's all about learning our lessons. It's not about beating yourself up. So much of what happens in the unconscious mind is we go through a painful situation. And then we say, all right, I'm going to remind you, says the unconscious mind, again and again and again, I'm going to beat you over the head with this to remind you, don't put yourself in that kind of situation again. But of course, because our mind is so focused on it, we tend to put ourselves into it again and again. Life is about learning, not about punishing ourselves. And so we go through a painful situation. We say, all right, what is my lesson here? And let me learn that lesson and move forward and move on. Let me not make a fetish of this. And I can then take that lesson, change my behavior, work on that. If I make another mistake, all right. It's all about learning. Now, shame, which is very close to our hearts, keeps us from learning the lesson because it just wants to hide. It just wants to put it away someplace, deep and dark and secret, so that nobody else will see. I came to a conclusion at one point that whatever I did could possibly be published on the headlines of the New York Times, whatever it was. Now, there are some things in my past that I would prefer not to have published in the headlines of the New York Times, I can tell you that. But if it were, I could look at it and I say, well, you know what? That's true. That's something that I did, and I wish that I hadn't, and I paid a price for doing that. And now I moved on, and I've learned from that. And I don't need to be ashamed about that. It's just simply true. And we come to that point of neutrality inside of ourselves, not like a sociopath. A sociopath is disconnected from themselves, or disconnected from the people around them, and they're definitely disconnected from God. In your connection to the divine, you have keen sympathy and understanding, not only for yourself, but for other people. But you don't drown in self-pity. That is not in any way a realized state. So we learn discernment. We learn jnana, wisdom. And through that, we learn to discriminate what is of God and what is not of God. What draws us closer to God and what takes us further away. Recent Kriyabhan was telling the story. Actually, he's telling the story at a Kriya initiation, but that he'd been practicing for a long time. He says when he first got initiated into Kriya, he made a determination that if he got up late for work and instead of rushing about and skipping Kriya, he would do his Kriya, take the time to do it well, do it perfectly, and then if he had to miss breakfast, if he had to do other things to make up, he would do that. And he would never miss it. And as a result of making that determination, he never got up late after doing it once. Because the mind registers that. And it says, oh, there's no escape clause. You know, we all have an internal lawyer inside the mind. And it's always looking for the escape clause. It's always looking for, oh, okay, how can I get around this one? But when it comes to truth, there's no getting around it. Mother Hamilton said one time she got up to give a talk, and she went into everything that she had ever done that she felt bad about, that she felt ashamed about, and she told God and everyone there. But you know, once it's all out in the open, what are you to be afraid of? So many of us live this life of, as the book says, quiet desperation. And we're so afraid. People will see who we really are, and when they do, they will reject us. They will not want us around if they really knew who I was. And the truth is, God already knows who you are. And God accepts you and loves you, even in this moment, just as you are. I don't know about you, when I was young, there was something that was called a come-as-you-are party, and they go around and round up kids when sometimes they're just in their pajamas, and off they go to a party, and you come as you are. When we enter into the state of communion with God, it's a come-as-you-are party. It's however you're dressed, it's whatever you've been doing, it's warts, it's everything. And if you wait until you are perfect in order to approach God, when will you that ever happen? Now, Jesus said a very interesting thing. He said, be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And we look around and we look at ourselves and we look at other people and we say, well, who in the world can match that? Was he asking for something impossible? And there's a great truth behind this, because as we purify the mind and we merge our little consciousness into divine consciousness, perfection begins to manifest itself. Not because on a human level we know everything or we're perfect in that way, but we enter into a state of perfectness. And we feel it. It's God that we're touching, and God is perfect. And because we're communing with God and touching in with God, we feel that perfection resonating through every part of our being. The more we attune ourselves to that perfectness, the more that we live that life and let it manifest through us and flow through us, just as even Kaliya was talking about in the song, letting that perfection just flow through us, then we are perfect, even as our Father in heaven is perfect. And therefore we can fulfill that saying. And it is not something, it is not a bridge too far. It is not something that is impossible. It may be rare that an individual so perfects themselves in their communion with God that they have that experience. But it doesn't rule it out. And it is what we are striving for. And when you touch, Mother once said that when she bowed down to Master's feet, she touched her feet, and then she felt his robe, and he felt the fabric of who he was. And she said, I felt that fabric that I wanted to weave as my own being. That bliss, that upliftment, that perfection. And you know what? Here's the wonderful thing. It already exists inside of you. You don't have to create it. You don't have to become something in that sense. You just really discover who you already are. And so much of our pain and so much of our suffering in life is we intuitively understand that we're so much more than what we currently experience. And we feel the pain of that loss. And so to get to work from this moment forward and to attune yourself constantly to that perfection that is flowing through you. And then that perfection will inform your consciousness. That'll be intuitive wisdom that will guide you. And it will guide your own intelligence. It will guide your own will, not from a distance, but through the intimacy of your own thoughts, your own feelings. But you'll feel the signature of the infinite upon those thoughts and upon those feelings. And this is the truth. It is the truth, and it's something that you can experience even in this life. And so let us rise up into that perfectness. Let us strive for that with all of our strength, all of our minds, our whole soul, our whole self. And when we make sincere effort like that, then surely God's compassion must spring forward. And he will rush out and grab us up in his arms and lead us into that eternal kingdom. One of those who did rise up and enter into that eternal kingdom is a great saint from India. His name is Kabir. And Kabir had some Muslim background, but he is also attracted to the Hindu thought. And he started chanting Ram Nam. And he chanted it until he merged himself. And he was a simple man. He was a weaver in Benares, in the city of Benares. And he wrote these beautiful, beautiful songs. And we don't have the music from those songs anymore, but we have the words, much like David in the Old Testament. We have the words, but not the music. And so he writes this. All things are created by Om, the love form of his body. He is without form, without quality, without decay. Seek thou union with him. But that formless God takes a thousand forms in the eyes of his creatures. He is pure and indestructible. His form is infinite and fathomless. He dances in rapture, and waves of form arise from his dance. The body and the mind cannot contain themselves when they are touched by his great joy. He is immersed in all consciousness, all joys, and all sorrows. He has no beginning and no end. He holds all within his bliss. When we read of these saints from around the world, what we read about is God experience. And I maintain that you can go to any temple, any church, any mosque, and you will find there some souls who are lit up with God. Their eyes sparkle, their skin shines. They're obviously in touch with something greater, higher. And love manifests through them. Joy and bliss are theirs. These are lovers of God, and they are beloved of God. Let us universalize our vision. Let us seek out lovers of God wherever we may find them. And when we stumble across those who are in error, let us not be judgmental about them. But in our minds, let us lend them strength, wisdom, joy, love, and compassion. And thereby help to raise up all of this world. Mother Krishnabai used to ask Papa Ramdas to read her the newspaper at night. Now, you have to understand, Mother Krishnabai would be up at 3 a.m. and be working all through the day in service. And now it's 9, 10 o'clock at night. Papa would be reading to her these stories from around the world. And sometimes her head would start to, the dippy ducks? You know, your head goes down, snaps back up, and kind of going to sleep. And he said, Mataji, why don't you go to sleep? You've worked hard all day. Why do you want to hear all about this news around the world? She says, no. She says, this is my opportunity to pray for every one of these people and every one of these situations. Now, just imagine what the effect would be on you when you hear the news or you hear of some great calamity or problem or somebody misbehaving. And how in the past you may have been judgmental. You may have thought, oh, this world, it's just a terrible place. It's all going to hell. There's no hope for it. And what are you doing if you're not cursing this world and actually helping to reinforce the very things you don't like? Inadvertently, true. But still you are. Now, when you pray for this world, you hear about some earthquake, you hear about some calamity, you hear about somebody misbehaving, and you say, oh Lord, you must help these people. You must provide comfort. You must provide the material means for them to eat and have shelter. You must see to it. And your prayer is for the upliftment and the safety and the well-being of everyone concerned. Just think of that. Just think how that would make you feel and how it changes your relationship with this world. Now, it doesn't excuse bad behavior. Not at all. But you are lending your light, your strength, your spirit to the upliftment of that individual. And through doing that, you help to transform this world. So let us think deeply on this. Really go to work. You know, it's where we live, moment to moment, day to day. That's what tells the tale. And you can hear the best words and read the best books and then just go off and do whatever it is that you want to do. One time there was a group that was sitting with one of the great spiritual masters, and he was gossiping about this person and that person, and finally somebody said, Baba, you should be teaching us some great truths here and helping us. Instead, you're just gossiping about this person and that person. And so he went around to each person. He says, what are you going to do tomorrow? And each one had their plans and told him exactly what they would be doing tomorrow. He says, see, you've already decided your lives. What difference does it make whether I say one thing or another? It's not going to influence any of you. You're just going to go out and do what you want to do anyway. Then he started gossiping about everyone again. And isn't there some truth in that? We have to go to work on ourselves. we really have to take ourselves in hand and say, all right, I really want to change my life. And I have to do that by making decisions, new decisions. I can't be doing the same things and expecting different results. It just doesn't work that way. And so to really go in and go to work on yourself, change yourself. Master used to say, change yourself and you will change thousands. Just imagine the ripple effect that goes out from you. Say, well, I'm just one little person. How would I change anybody's life? You do. Because you affect so many people whom you meet. So change yourself, and you will change thousands. And you will be a blessing to this world, not a curse. So let us exercise judgment and withhold being judgmental and be a blessing. Now, if you will chant with me, there is a chant that we learned from Swami Ram Dass. It's Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. And it means victory to God, victory to the light. Victory to God within you, awakening that light, awakening that strength of spirit, and awakening that light and spirit in everyone in this entire world. And God showed me one time how in a crowd, sometimes you read about how at one of the football games or something, the crowd starts going crazy and people get trampled and actually killed. A lot of fear can sweep through a crowd like that. And in the same way, there can be a conflagration of light that just sweeps through and suddenly there's an upliftment, there's a peace, there's an enlightenment that everyone experiences. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And to see that conflagration like a flame going out all around this world. And suddenly people just feel a feeling of peace and upliftment and attunement to the divine. You think it's impossible? It may be because you limit God only. And so we don't limit God. So let us sing this chant. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. 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 Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai 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 Ram Om. Just feel that feeling spread out all around this globe. An aura of beatific light holding this world. And let us all lend our strength to the upliftment and noblement and enlightenment of this world. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. Unequivocal. If you please pray with me.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder, the beauty. feel the wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence, in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy
perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
I bow to the light within you. May that sacred presence within you reveal itself to you and show you your true and divine nature.